If you replace the word monkey with the word demon in each one of these names,
a howler demon.
You got a good demon. You got a good sort of dungeon crawler there.
You got a spider demon. You got a proboscis demon.
Butterscotch
shenanigans. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 171 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast, Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam and I can barely make my mouth move appropriately when I'm trying to say things.
And I'm Sam and I'm the visual problem solver.
And this is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is Octopus Gun 2018.
We're the month of Octopus.
Yes.
Kicking it off with a nice spooky vibe.
An octopus spooky. With a gun. Yeah. Which hand is it in?
It's the classic Halloween. Everybody's hanging octopus with gun paraphernalia around their houses and trees and things.
I just kind of want this now.
This would be amazing.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? Octopus Gun should be the holiday that starts October. You know what I mean?
Octopus... That's the name of the
day.
Today is Octopus Gun.
Uh-huh. That's the day where we celebrate. What would it be like if octopi had guns?
If cephalopods were smart enough to wield, because they have little tiny brains, their tentacles are...
They're very smart.
Yeah, their tentacles are independent. So they could technically be trying to shoot you like differently with each arm they have. Yeah.
Yes. So I mean,
they could slap
the
you
day,
and shoot you at the same time.
It's the day where we remind ourselves to be thankful. That octopi are not smart enough to have guns.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also that they don't have skeletons.
Yeah. You know? So they got to stay in there.
They got to stay in the water.
They got to stay in there.
You keep your guns and you stay in the ocean.
But can you imagine? I mean, people talk about scuba diving with sharks being like, ooh, it's so scary.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, what if octopus had guns? Then it would be very scary,
yeah.
I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, also, before we get started, we have a warning. Anything could happen on this show. There's going to be profanity. There's going to be profanity and some other stuff. We're going to talk about sea creatures. So if you're a child, then you should get out of here because this gets spooky.
Yeah.
It's very scary. Mm-hmm. And we're in October now, so I feel like this is the month where children should just probably hide.
Yeah, mm-hmm. you should cover your eyes everywhere you go.
There's going to be skeletons. Sam put a skeleton outside his house.
I put multiple skeletons out. This was my...
Real ones.
So my wife and I every year put just
murder
a little...
Murder somebody.
Well, yeah.
Take the skeleton.
I mean, yeah.
Put it in the tree. Put it in the tree.
We put just a few buckaroonies into our Halloween decoration budget. And finally this year, so we've sort of been slowly setting the scene. We decided to go with like a skeleton motif and sort of a graveyard vibe.
I think skeletons are my favorite part of
They're just so fun because they're so funny. I think I just
And
always...
there's one living inside all of us, you know.
Yeah.
It's like a soul, but a hard one.
Your hard soul.
I remember the Disney, I think it was Disney, their skeleton cartoon.
Yeah, the old skeleton
yeah.
dance.
I don't know if
it, I showed that to my wife for the first time a few months ago because she didn't I was laughing about it one day because it just came to my mind or something, you know, and she was like,
the one that's like playing the xylophone on its rib cage.
They do all sorts of insane stuff in that. Like, if anybody hasn't seen that, I think it's on YouTube. You should watch it. The skeleton dance.
Yeah,
what it's called.
I found it on YouTube.
Absolutely hysterical. And so I think, you know, skeletons to me are definitely the spooky part of Halloween. So we got multiple skull situations happening. We have like you can just buy a sack that's just got all the bones in it. And then you kind of just like put the bones wherever you want. And so we laid them out so that there's a skeleton sort of strewn across the yard who's like grabbing a lamp that's coming out of the ground. And then, but this year, so this is all sort of setting the scene over the last couple of years, slowly getting all of our pieces in place so that this year we bought the reticulated skeleton. So it actually is like a full skeleton mm-hmm. that you can move its little arms around. So we put one in the tree. So he's posed up in the tree, like he's just sort of hanging out, climbing up there. And then there's another one in a rocking chair on our front porch.
Okay, listen.
Just hanging out with his legs crossed.
Listen, this posable skeleton thing just gave me a great idea on how to maximize your yard decoration potential.
Okay.
Posable octopus.
Because one of the – well, they don't have skeletons. Remember, we covered this.
That's true, yeah.
So one
Does
of
mean
the,
they have no souls?
They must not.
Well, they've still got soft souls, but they have no hard souls.
Gotcha. Maybe their beak is their soul.
There you go.
Yeah.
So the thing is at the end of the year, you got to put up your Halloween decorations. Then you got to take them down. Mm-hmm. Then you got to put up your Christmas stuff.
And well,
take
Thanksgiving.
That down. Thanksgiving. Then you got to put up your Thanksgiving decor. Take that down. Right? Okay. So what if you fused it and you said, I've got all these articulated skeletons. You set up a nativity scene for Halloween skeletons. Okay.
Right.
Maybe put like a turkey in there somewhere mm-hmm. just to kind of hit all the base. And then you just leave that up.
For 3 months.
But then during Thanksgiving, you just put pilgrim hats on them.
Yes.
There you go.
And if you wire it up with color changing LED strips, then of course over Halloween you just flip them to orange because mm-hmm. that's the spooky color.
Yep.
And then
you flip them to like yellowish autumnal,
just
vibe.
Autumn. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, autumn.
Maybe
color.
Just keep it orange. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, I think just and keep it orange.
And then, you know, toward the end of the year, you change them to whatever color that is.
I thought you were going to suggest that you have a skeleton and then you, for Christmas time, you put Santa's skin on it.
Yeah, I was going to go there, but then I would never think of that. Well,
you can convert it into a Nightmare Before Christmas vibe, right? Uh-huh. Because then basically now for Thanksgiving, it's a statement on how awful the pilgrims were because they destroyed an entire social structure single-handedly.
Halloween decor becomes a political statement.
And then that November. Becomes The Nightmare Before Christmas, which is just a spectacular spooky movie.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I like got a plan in place.
Actually, yeah. If you make a skeleton nativity scene, that basically is The Nightmare Before Christmas decoration. So is The Nightmare Before Christmas just another name for Halloween? Is that?
Yeah, basically. I guess that's true. It's a long time.
It's a little ways before, but it is before.
Uh-huh.
All right, well, let's get on to the meat and bones of the show.
This hard soul.
Gotta put the meat on these hard souls.
The show. First, we'd like to thank our supporters over at moneygrab.bscotch.net. We grabbed their money.
Mm-hmm.
Just grabbed it right out of them.
Yeah. Yeah, if you do try to donate, a hand will come out of your computer monitor or phone.
It's going
to
get that money.
It's just going to grab it. It actually just takes your wallet.
Yeah, we don't want the money. We sell the wallet.
Yeah. We have a thriving wallet secondhand business.
Yeah. So we had a bunch of anonymous donors this week, which is awesome. So thank you. That's very honorable. Mm-hmm. You know,
you don't want any shout outs.
Nope. You're
just doing your duty.
And of course, we'd like to also thank our recurring supporters who, you know, we just every month we just come by.
Take your wallet.
Again. Grab those wallets.
You guys must be buying a lot of wallets.
Maybe from us on the black market.
It gets pricey, but you know.
We get a cut every time, though. It's a pretty good deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we get like 50 cents per wallet.
Yeah. On every sale.
They're on the blockchain, so we can track them all the way through.
Yep. Mm-hmm. All right. Also, we have coming up on October 20th, the Shenanicon. So that's in 19 days or 17 days from the time this podcast episode will air.
Coming soon.
There are currently only 22 tickets left as of this morning. So
they're drying up.
So if you want to get in on it,
out of water,
get in on it.
And this is a convention. It's going to be a mini con, I guess. It's about 4 hours. It's a
shenanigan.
So we're going to have first play, I guess, of Level Head. So if you come, then you'll be able to play Level Head long before anybody else. And it's still under heavy active development. So you can kind of also see, you know. You get to see an interesting snapshot of the game, and you'll get to play it.
And you'll be playing basically four-player co-op so that we can get as many hands and eyeballs on that game as possible.
Yes. And we'll also have food, and we will record a live podcast episode. So it's going to be
a good time.
It's going to be a good time. Those tickets are $15, and you can find those over at meet.bscotch.net, M-E-E-T. We should maybe get an updated URL for that one.
Do you think anybody else thinks that it's meat? I always think that it's meat.
I wonder because I know that the word peak, P-E-E-K, people often write as P-E-A-K.
Correct. Yeah.
Maybe it goes the same way, you know, because we have the word peak and peak and also meat and meat.
Mm-hmm.
And
this is all very confusing.
It's all very confusing.
But I could also just redirect M-E-A-T to the same place.
Oh yeah, let's just do that.
Yeah, that was
good. Then we just said go to meet.bscotch.net and whatever you want.
Whatever you want.
Other than we also have to add in M-E-I-T because you know
mate.
Which one is that?
That's just a thing. It's just a way a person can spell a thing.
It looks like a German spelling or something.
What about like M-O-E-T with like an umlaut?
Yep.
Put it. Is that a thing?
No, you can't have umlauts in URLs. Fortunately,
meet. .bscotch.net. So just go there. Get your tickets to Shenanicon. All right. On to the real news. Mm-hmm. We need to talk. Well, last week we talked about peppers, ghost peppers.
Yeah.
Sam took some of them home.
I did.
Let's talk about this.
So I tested one because Adam was like, I touched it to the tip of my tongue and it, you know, it shot fire into my body. So
these are ghost peppers.
So I thought I will give this a ghost pepper.
Spooky.
We're in the spooky season. Perfect.
Yeah, it's Halloween.
So I was like, I want to maximize the spookiness though. So I first licked it and it was very hot on the outside. So I was like, this would be great. So I cut a sliver of it off, and then I love meat, cheese, and crackers. Like, that's my snack. It's my go-to thing.
And you thought, I'm going to ruin this.
Yes.
So what I did was I had made five meat cheese cracker, you know, combos. And then I sliced the pepper and I told my wife, I said, hide that pepper slice in one of those five. In one of those five.
Ooh.
And she's like, really? I said, yes. Okay.
But you, so, you weren't taking turns though. So it wasn't like the two-player roulette.
No.
It was just, okay.
It was going to happen at some point.
It was going to happen to me.
So okay. This is just your own personal roulette.
Yeah. I was like, let's make this spooky and fun. So, and then she made me close my eyes and then she would just shove one in my mouth. So because she said you could actually see, you know, which one it was hiding under. So it was number four.
That means that she knew which – so she was like, I'm going to be the one to do this to you.
Uh-huh. So it was really fun. And then the fifth one – so I did – the fourth one had the pepper in it. Very good actually because it was just a small enough piece that it didn't – it was very hot but didn't like destroy my soul. So then I doubled it and I just put a bigger piece in the next one.
Oh, no.
Also very good. Very fucking hot, but it lasted like probably 15 minutes where I was like, whoo. And then I was like, all right, Diana, I said, let's make this interesting. So because she packs me a lunch before work every day. And I was like, sometime this week, I want you to put a pretty big amount of this pepper. Just put it into one of these. I don't want to know which one it is. I just want you to secretly. So she's like, okay.
So every day you're going to be like, guys, I'm going to go get lunch. And then the whole way down, you'd be like, oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah. I was like, let's do this. So I don't – it might be today. It might be – I don't know. We're at the beginning of the week. So it's like – and it's anybody's guess which day it's going to be.
All right. You know, I hope it's in something that you can't tell it's in there because that's going to be – if you pull it out, you can see it.
Oh, no. I won't be able to tell because it's – what I have this week is like a green curry that already has peppers in it. So I won't be able to tell at all.
So she'll just like throw some in there.
Now, it'll just suddenly be really, really hot.
If she listens to this episode, I want to suggest that she play the long game and not actually put any in your lunch this week so that you spend the whole week in anticipation and they're like, oh, I guess there wasn't any in there.
And then afterwards she'll just be like, oh, I forgot. Sorry.
Next week, still nothing. But then the next week,
and you've forgotten about it.
You've forgotten about it at this point, and then just boom, she'll just slip a fuckload of ghost pepper in on like just a random Tuesday. There you go.
Yeah, that'll probably happen now
because you're
Wiley.
It'll be unexpected this week, but not that unexpected.
That's true.
You know, so if you want to really go, this should just be a general tradition.
Yeah, I'm hoping
once
it's just
a month you're gonna have ghost pepper.
I'm hoping it's just a fun game that we play sort of indefinitely
just to keep you on your toes.
Because how exciting, you know?
Very. Otherwise, very exciting.
Because batch meal prep, you're like, I know exactly what I'm eating for the next 4 days.
But
if one of them might kill you, it's very exciting.
I just can't even imagine. I just couldn't.
You just don't get to have lunch that day, though. You know? I mean,
you do. It's just hot.
If there's any kind of substantial amount of ghost pepper in your lunch.
Oh, I'm ready.
You're out of commission.
It's okay, I got rice.
Has it included the seeds so far?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Wow.
That's bold. For it.
Yeah. Oh, so do you have orange ones or red ones? Like how red are they?
They're red.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So demon butt red.
Yeah, they're peak spice.
Peak spice.
Do demons have red butts? Are they like those baboons? Is that?
I think demons are already red, so they have purple butts.
Oh, because like the baboons. Oxygen can't get in there very good.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
They also have weird, you know, purple like folds on their faces. Like those are their monkeys.
Monkeys are weird. Monkeys have all sorts of weird folds and things.
Are monkeys just demons? Is that?
I mean, yeah.
I feel like it.
Yeah. Is that proboscis monkey? Definitely a demon.
That's a demon.
100%.
They're tree demons.
Also, the ones with scream. The super, super long arms that are like twice as long as their bodies.
Is that like the spider monkeys or is that
something
else?
A spider monkey.
Yeah, and then there's howler monkey. Yeah, how are these not – these are just demons. Yeah. They sit in a tree and they make horrible screaming noises.
Yes, if you replace the word monkey with the word demon in each one of these names
– a howler demon.
You got a good sort of dungeon crawler there.
You got a spider demon. You got a proboscis demon. That's just disgusting.
Yeah. And then you got bonobos and they're just hanging out.
They're like imps basically.
They're imps. Yeah. all right. So the last thing I want to talk about before we get on to questions, from listeners, is the any benefit problem.
Yes.
All right. Here's the deal.
What's the deal?
Last week we were like, community management. How do you do it? What is it? How do you community and manage? So we looked around trying to figure out, like, what do other studios do to cultivate a community, to market their games, all this stuff? Because even though we feel like we've done some things right in that area, we have probably done almost all things wrong, which is generally how we kind of view most of the, well, everything that we do.
Right? Mainly because we tend to just largely ignore social media as like a, as an avenue for potential anything. We don't really participate.
But one of the things we noticed is that most developers don't do this. Yes. They're on there. They're on the Twitter. They're on the Facebook. Mm-hmm. They're on the Instagram, the Snapchat,
there's a lot of them.
Uber, you know, like whatever, they're on there. Mm-hmm. And so we had a big meeting last week, just kind of out of nowhere, where we started talking about this and like, should we be doing this? And what happens when you do it?
What is the point? Is basically the question.
Yeah, because I think there's this idea that kept coming up over and over again, is this idea that people seem to have that you need to manage your social media presence. And if you do it well, then you will grow it.
Yes. Which is the whole goal, right?
Right.
Because you want to sort of – the whole goal supposedly of the general of using social media is to sort of – you get your own audience and then you can talk to them, right?
Yeah.
This whole thing. And then we do this ourselves, but our avenue has always been through email marketing.
Yeah.
As opposed to through social. And so we're looking at all these different community management practices, talk to a few people just start asking the question, like, what would it mean to – how do you actually grow? What's the most effective way to grow one of these? And then what does that mean?
So, So we looked around trying to figure out – we looked at stats on – because all this information is just up there on Twitter. So you can see, you know, how many tweets a company has sent out and how many followers they have, et cetera. What we found is that there is effectively no measurable relationship between how you tweet, how frequently you tweet, what you tweet, anything, and how many followers you have. These things are completely uncorrelated with each other. The best example is Apple, where their primary Twitter account has 2.5 million followers and zero tweets.
Mm-hmm.
They've never tweeted.
Pretty remarkable ratio.
Yeah, so we're looking at that and we're like, what is that?
And then we're like, okay, well, what else is there? So there's Nick Offerman. He's tweeted like 6,000 times. He's got 1.6 million followers. We've tweeted like 8,000 or 9,000 times. Mm-hmm. And we've got like 20-something thousand followers. So we've tweeted way more than Nick Offerman.
Mm-hmm.
But he has like 200 times as many followers as we do. There's a lot of other developers we looked at, some of which have, you know, are approaching 100,000 tweets. And if you look at their sort of like followers per tweet – ratio. Mm-hmm. If you assume that tweets can generate followers, then you would assume that people who tweet well would have like a high ratio, right? That every tweet they send out, they might get new followers. It seems like the more people tweet,
right,
it doesn't matter.
So what we sort of – the conclusion we came to is that Twitter sort of actually is an interesting barometer for not
what you're doing on Twitter.
Right, but what you're doing in the world. So whatever your profession is, you know, whether you're a comedian like Nick Offerman,
or you're Coca-Cola,
or you're Coca-Cola or Apple, right? Yeah. The quality of the thing you're doing external to Twitter is what drives
people will follow you because of that,
right? Basically, regardless of whether or not you're even tweeting, according to Apple's
Twitter. Right.
Yep. So,
well, and there's an engagement thing, because we're looking at really popular company accounts. So Google has 30 million Twitter followers, and they send out tweets that get like 150 to 300 likes at best out of 30 million followers. So their participation rate is essentially zero.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Coca-Cola, they've sent out 250,000 tweets. And we're like, well, why is that? You know, but if you think about Coca-Cola's marketing strategy, it's we just want to dunk our logo and advertisements literally everywhere. Mm-hmm. So if people are are like, I want this, I want you to dump all this advertisement stuff into my Twitter feed, Coca-Cola is like, yes, we will do that. So people follow Coca-Cola, and then several times a day they're dropping commercials.
They get pictures of beautiful people drinking Coke.
Right. Yeah. So the interesting thing about this is that, and we ourselves have used it in the past, when the way we've thought about it is that it's very good for reaching out to people one-on-one and occasionally for getting sort of like hot tips about something. Someone will, you know, include us in a chain of conversations with a streamer or with a reporter, and then maybe something will come of it. The reality, though, is that 99% of the time that has ever happened, nothing has ever happened
Yeah. And response. It's expensive.
It's very expensive to sort of pay attention to. And so, and it says general, this generally goes to this really interesting trend, I think, in Western culture in particular, which is about sort of our relationship to new tech, which is that we just always just get it. So it doesn't quite matter. Like, we don't necessarily sit back and say, what's actually the benefit here? What's the, and the consequences?
What's the cost?
And then decide sort of on a measured approach, like, do we want to be doing this? Or does this seem like a valuable thing? It's just people tend to just get stuff. Like, you're just like, oh my God, it's the new thing. So we're very, was it technophilic? Is that the word? Like, love of tech.
Yes, sure.
And so there's this interesting problem that arises, which is this idea of the any benefit mode of thinking about this stuff. So the way it goes, I guess, is if you want to, this comes from the
deep work.
Yeah. Which is this idea that if there's a piece of tech or an activity that you can do that has any benefit at all, period.
So if you on Twitter, you could say, yeah, I've sent 12,000 tweets, but one time I got a note from a journalist. Yeah. So it's worth it.
Yeah.
Worth
so it. The problem is the any benefit approach, basically what it does is
it just neglects the cost.
Yeah, completely neglects the cost. And so this has always been the question we've had as far as Twitter goes, because we don't have the time. Our studio is too small to actually have someone kind of dedicated to this, because it just means we're not doing core development work if we're doing that. So this is not necessarily the case for like a larger studio or a larger team, but definitely in our case, every time we've looked at it, we're like, how does this make sense in terms of we're trading time making the game for time doing this Twitter thing? But it doesn't – it's and sometimes that is good.
Well, and the cost is
– rarely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the time cost is enormous. Mm-hmm. So we were doing the math. We stumbled across some Twitter account that had like 80,000 tweets, game developer. And we're like, what does that really mean? What does that kind of translate into? Because when you go to send a tweet, there's the time spent composing it, which is often very short. Mm-hmm.
But at minimum, it's a few minutes.
Yeah, at minimum, you know, you're spending a minute or two kind of think like, oh, look, I'm eating a bagel, blip, mm-hmm. and take a picture of it right. and wait for the upload. And then there's that several times a day of going back and being like, who liked my bagel picture? Mm-hmm. You know, because you got to get that sort of self-gratification mm-hmm. of knowing that
and,
people
and
care
And also
you're
going to respond to somebody who replies. And
yeah, and then
stuff.
You kind of see other people's tweets. And then like while you're in there, you jump into some other conversations. You get mad about a few things. You see some idiot thing that some mm-hmm. idiot said. Get mad about that. You know, and so by sending your one picture of a bagel up on the internet, you've lost, you know, like a good 20 minutes of your day kind of scattered about in various mm-hmm. fragments. And then that's disregarding also the kind of attentional residue that comes from bouncing back and forth between this distractionary activity that keeps you from getting real work done, mm-hmm. right, and being able to focus on real stuff. So if we just assume, though, that somehow using the power of magic, you've locked down your distractionary time per tweet to just 5 minutes.
Composing plus distractionary time.
Right. Then
plus just the impact on your productivity right. from the mood change yeah. that you've
if you are somehow basically a godlike figure of focus mm-hmm. And you've only managed to lose 5 minutes per tweet, if you've sent 80,000 tweets, then that is 3 full work years.
Yeah, work years.
Of 40 hours a week,
yeah.
50 weeks a year. That's a shitload of time. Like, how many games could you have made? How many useful things yeah. could you have done?
Yeah, I think it's
and how many more Twitter followers would you have if you did useful things?
That's the interesting thing about it. So actually, again, because it seems like the time you spend off the platform is what gives you the power on the platform, truthfully, right? It's not the quality of your tweets that does it. It's the quality of the stuff that you make, especially as a game dev. It literally is just the quality of the stuff you make. And this is why you see new studios, of course. You do want to have that sort of initial group of people who are in your corner, which Twitter is good for.
But they didn't just discover you on Twitter.
Generally,
they came there because you were doing other
stuff.
Yeah,
they saw you somewhere else. So they saw you in some game developer forum, or they saw mm-hmm. you in like the Touch Arcade forums, or they saw you somewhere else.
If you're participating in the Twitter thing, like they might see you through something like Screenshot Saturday, right? But they're always coming there because of the game. So like, don't ever mistake what people are coming there for.
They're not there for you.
They're for the game. You know? And so, yeah, it's all about just making the thing. And so, you know, if you have to make a decision about where you're spending your time, just spend more of it on the game making side of things, or the, you know, general marketing side of things,
yeah.
rather than the social media side of things.
I mean, just
it's a follow on, not a preemptive
Just as a very simple thought experiment, you know, what if Nick Offerman turned down the role on Parks and Rec and he said, I want to focus on building my Twitter presence. Mm-hmm. And instead of doing that,
yeah,
he just tweeted for 8 years. He would not have 1.6 million Twitter followers because nobody would care what he had to say because he would never have been Ron Swanson, mm-hmm. you know?
Yep.
So I think it's just, yeah. And so when you look at those follower counts, like you said, Sam, I think it's a reminder that what that really is it's a very loose metric for how much people are willing to listen to what you have to say mm-hmm. because of external things that you've done.
Yeah. But I think the other problem with you know Twitter in particular, outside of the any benefit sort of way of approaching the world, is just how cheap it seems to be in the moment. Yes.
It's just a couple minutes here. Yeah,
because it's just – you just sort of send off you just kind of look at it, send something off, and it feels like you haven't interrupted your day. It feels mm-hmm. like you haven't spent very much time. But if you really think like we were talking about, if you really just think about what all goes into that – And then the consequences after that moment, whether you checking Twitter and or sending a tweet, just the general impact on your day and on your productivity, our estimate of just 5 minutes per tweet is crazy underestimate mm-hmm. without a doubt. And so even us, like with our Twitter account of, you know, we've sent 9,000 tweets or whatever that is. And so that's, you know, 45,000 minutes.
And this is us using Hootsuite to schedule tweets and doing stuff to actively mitigate
exposure. That means we have spent months of human hours, mm-hmm. months of human development time.
That we did not spend on games.
That did not go into games. It's
terrible.
Mm-hmm. It's something that when things happen in these little tiny moments that are easy just to kind of gloss over, it's just so easy to not sum over their consequences. It's kind of like also dieting too, right? It's like you just eat a little too much every time, and then now 5 years go by, and all of a sudden
you're 300 pounds overweight.
Right? It's these little tricky fuckers, right? Yep. That are just they make you feel like you haven't made a bad decision. They make you feel like you haven't even done anything outside the norm or anything unhealthy or whatever. But it's because
it's a habit, and it's
a cumulative negative that grows actually surprisingly fast. And we hadn't actually put any numbers on it until last week, and we were just like, fuck.
This is gross.
This is a huge problem.
I hate it.
Yeah, yeah, people always talk about this for email too, right? I mean, there's a big thing in businesses where they say, how do we get people to spend less time in their email inboxes? Mm-hmm. Because it's so easy to fire off an email to somebody. You can do it without even thinking about it. You force them to check it. And, you know, and we know like, people that I know who work in more sort of corporate kinds of places spend a solid like third of their day every day just sending and responding to emails.
Being a human router.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, like people say it like that, but that means a third of your year, you know? So that means every year you're putting in 4 months of your entire work is going into sending emails. And people talk about that with respect to email, but for some reason
– Social media
hasn't quite hit that.
Because it's marketing.
Radar. Yeah.
But it's not.
I think it's almost faster. That's probably why.
I think it's exactly why. It's easier to ignore it even.
Yeah.
And because you're doing it from this perspective of marketing and trying mm-hmm. to get exposure and all this kind of stuff, it does – it's one of the things – it has the horrible coupling of any benefit plus this tiny amount of mm-hmm. apparent cost, which just isn't true. Yeah. So we've come down much more forcefully now even than we used to.
My favorite moment, I think this was last week, was we got an email from we have business insurance because we're, you know, mm-hmm. we're in this office and we gotta be doing things by the books. Mm-hmm. So we start a fire or
we didn't start a fire.
If we did, we shoot a potato cannon through the window.
It's just usual things.
Are we covered with if we did that?
It depends on whether we did it on accident.
Okay.
We accidentally built this potato cannon and then it fired and there was just kind of a negligence.
So it's sort of like this is sort of like when Epic Games accidentally added boob physics.
That happened last week, didn't it?
Yeah. Yes. That's one of those accidental things where you're just like, we accidentally.
Let's talk about this for a second.
Hold on, I got to finish real quick. Because the thing that happened, you got an animation bone to pick. The thing that happened last week was I got an email from our insurance people and they were like, hey, we're updating the policy for this year. If you could please review it and then let us know if this looks good and then we'll go ahead and renew it.
Sure.
And then they attached 158 pages of insurance policy. and I could have done I got to do this, right? Because it's mm-hmm. they emailed it to me. I'm supposed to review it. Mm-hmm. And I just responded and I just said, I'm not going to read this. Tell me if anything changed and tell me what changed. If not, whatever. Just renew it. I literally don't care. As long as the price hasn't changed that much, you know? And then they were like, oh, yeah. And then they just replied with a single sentence. Like, here's the one thing that changed.
What? I'm
like, okay, then it's fine. And it was like such – it was like a 3% change.
And what, this is also why in our terms and privacy policy, which, again, I've tried to make human readable.
No one reads it, but
yeah. No one reads it, but I've tried to make it human readable for those people who do, because I think it's important that we have fair terms and all that kind of stuff.
It's one of the things is
a change log. So there's a change log on all these things. So that tells you what version it is.
There you go.
And then
– so instead of like, hey, our terms have changed, here's all of them again.
Yeah. You just go to the change log.
Not the difference.
It shows you the date. It shows you the version numbers for each of those dates. Mm-hmm. And it tells you – it gives you a rough summary of just what's changed. If something like really dramatic has changed, it just points you right to it.
Can you use a diff tool on a PDF?
Probably.
Because that would be useful.
It would be a complicated diff tool. So presumably somebody has made such a thing. But there's lots of binary.
Because all these kinds of things that come from like health insurance or whatever, like they always say.
If they're scanned though, then no. Because the chaos inside of a scan.
They're probably not scanned at that point. But
you'd have to upload it into Evernote and then
fax
it back down.
Print it down, sign it, fax it, scan it, fax it again. Send it back.
One of my favorite things about this office is actually that we have a fax number that people can fax us, but it just gets converted into a digital thing and emailed to us.
Yep.
As soon as they told us that, I was like, yes, I love you so much.
Well, but they also said it as if this could be a problem. And I was like, no, this is amazing. Not a problem.
We're still not going to give anybody that fax number.
Knowing that
we never have to physically receive a fax.
It is, yeah.
Even if we have to receive a fax.
It is one of those beautiful things that you realize, like, the further you get into running a business operation, is that you can get away with not doing most things. Because health insurance forms, our rep told us that the new provider, like, the only two things – she's like, the only two things that are required are you to sign the spot and they really want your fax number. So at the time, we didn't have a fax number. And so I just wrote NA, sent it back. And she was like, cool, this is fine. it was like the other company just needed to see that I saw that and put something in there, right?
Because what they want the most is your money.
Yes.
And they'll forgive a lot.
They'll forgive a lot.
You can have my money, but you can't have my facts.
Yeah. It's sort of a Braveheart situation. Mm-hmm. Anyways, let's talk about
– boob physics?
Let's talk about this physics.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Animation.
So I guess, Adam, you want to – tell us the story.
Yeah, I've got my Feedly to keep up to date with the RSS feeds of various things, you know. So like anytime I'm on my lunch break or whatever, then I'll go like scroll through and see what's going on. And so last week, Thursday, Friday, I don't know, I was coming back from break, reading on my way, and just saw this thing that just threw me for such a loop. I couldn't quite process, which was Epic Games was apologizing. Epic Games makes Fortnite, right? Mm-hmm. They were apologizing for this quote unquote bug that had slipped into the latest release, the latest update of Fortnite, which introduced breast physics. Mm-hmm. And so breast physics, for those who don't know, is the creepy stuff in a lot of games where for some fucking reason, the people who rigged and animated the things decided that the breasts need to jiggle when like the characters are jumping or whatever. So this is obviously gross and weird, and it was a big thing for a while in certain
This is like even
games.
If they're wearing body armor and everything else.
Yeah, they'll sort of be wiggling around in there.
Yep. And
what? Why?
So this is a thing, and the latest patch of Fortnite included this. They just added this into their female characters. And then, of course, people were like, the fuck? the fuck is this? And especially with Fortnite, because Fortnite doesn't seem like a game that's meant for...
It doesn't really have a lot of sexualization going on,
generally. Yeah. People are dressed like Triceratopses.
Very cartoony.
It's cartoony, and it's clear, and it has its demographic is very wide and includes, you know, kids and so on. But also it's supposed to be more just sort of generally approachable and not designed like in the idiotic way people used to design games to say these are only for 15-year-old boys, right? And that's – everything was designed around that. So people were mostly just kind of confused. I mean, I think there were some people who were probably, you know, outraged. But for the most part, they were just like,
but why though?
What? What is happening here? And so Epic immediately apologized. And they were like, we should have caught this. We shouldn't have let this go out in the patch.
It's a crazy
and
bug.
And they referred to it as a bug. Mm-hmm. Like that somehow they just accidentally introduced.
So
what is a bug?
Physics?
You know, if it's a part of the game that went in there without your intent as the designer. Right. I mean, it is possible that somebody on their animation team just did this.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. I mean,
because they were like, So
it was intentional, but it was a bug relative to the product.
Right. Because there's a question of whether or not this was a top-down decision or whether one of the animators was like, well, I'm touching up these dances. I'm going to also add this little little feature in here.
The thing is, though, so it's because as far as like what happens to the actual 3D rig. So for people who aren't familiar, so in 3D animation, you have your model. And so usually you can think about a person standing in like in a what's called T pose, which is they're standing with their legs together and their arms straight out. And you rig them by basically putting bones into that 3D model so that you can then wiggle those bones around and make them do animation. So the thing is with breast physics, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure you have to put...
There has to be a bone in there.
So you have to put bones. In other words, you have to modify the rig.
Yeah.
Which I feel like, yes, might have been a thing that like an animator randomly did, but I don't think... Like, if I were an animator working on a big project, I wouldn't be like, hey, I'm going to modify...
It's a weird thing to go rogue on.
Rig. Yeah. That's like a really intense thing to go rogue on, you know?
It is. Yeah, I'm not defending anybody. I'm just saying...
No, I get it. There might be more...
I'm saying that this is... Especially with the success of this game, they have to be growing like crazy. Like, they've got to be adding people to the team that they have no idea who these people are, frankly. So, if it was a top-down decision, that is...
Hilariously dumb, but if it's...
Really bad judgment. Yeah. but this is also the kind of thing that if they have bad internal review practices of what's, you know, what's going into their game, then...
Well, this is also kind of an interesting QA problem too, right? Because, you know, we're dealing with this now internally with our new small QA team. And it's something that we talked about with them quite a bit is not only do we want to see the bad stuff they found, we also want a summary of just all the things that they tried. Because otherwise there are holes that we... don't know about. Like, we don't know what has or hasn't been tested. And so when a feature gets added, now you're in a tricky spot, because if QA doesn't know you added it, then they can't test it, right? And so if you add a thing and do it silently, it might fly in everybody's radar and just, who knows, right?
Yeah, and in a game where it's a third-person view, for one.
Yeah.
Like, so if you're not looking for it.
Yeah, you flip the camera around. From
a little, yeah.
Right. So if you're not looking for this thing.
Then you might literally not see
it. Yeah, you might literally not see that some, you know, rogue animator team decided to do this until you get it out to the hands of 50 million people. And then even the tiny subset of those who actually would see it as a fraction is a huge number of people.
Yeah. However, somebody had to take a lot of effort to do this.
Yeah, so, they didn't just trip on the keyboard.
Yeah, so calling it a bug was just sort of like a...
It just seemed a weird way to do
but
it.
But I think the thing is that the reality is that most people who are playing games, just like we did before we actually started making them, like, you just have no idea how they're actually made.
Yeah.
And so the idea that there could be a bug that did this actually makes perfect sense, right? Because it's just...
To a typical player,
it'd be like, sort of dark magic it's just thing. A bug.
Well, it's also possible that these things were originally animated with breast physics and that they just turned it off. That there's like a Boolean switch somewhere.
That's true. That is true, actually.
And somebody flipped it.
Somebody flipped it.
That's actually totally true. Yeah.
So
it could have always been there.
Yeah, well, it is possible that it's like that it's a bug. It's certainly my gut reaction to the way that they framed it was and they apologized properly and all this kind of stuff. I think it was fine, but they didn't take any the kind of responsibility then of that they were taking was to me just so it was such a classic it was such a classic attempt to not be culpable, you know?
Yeah.
Because they apologized in a nice way, which was good. But then they were just like this was an accident, and like, but in the most accidental of forms, because that's what a bug is, right? Like completely unintentional. And I just can't.
This kind of reminds me of when Overwatch was first coming out, and then they were revealing the characters.
Yeah.
And then Tracer. Actually, no, it was when actually the game came out, and there was this character Tracer who she's super fast, and she's got these cool guns and glasses, and she's like she can teleport or she can move herself backwards in time or whatever, so she can like run ahead and then snap back and stuff. So. Very popular and iconic character from the game, and nothing even vaguely sexualized about her persona or anything. And then in the character selection screen, when they first launched Overwatch, this character was standing in that ridiculous, like,
butt-sticking-out
ass-to-camera with upper body turned so you can see side boob move that every, you know, Marvel poster has and whatever. Right. And –
yeah, so completely incompatible with the nature of the thing.
Yeah. It doesn't make sense given the game. It doesn't make sense given the character. None of this makes any sense at all. This character would not stand like this. Mm-hmm. Also, no human would stand like this because it's anatomically impossible to bend your spine that way. And so there were a bunch of people who were upset about it. And within like a day or two, they'd hot fixed it in and changed basically said,
like,
the pose.
That's a good point.
Because the thing they apologized properly and took responsibility for it. They were like, yeah, this was a bad judgment call on our part.
Yeah.
So just an old judgment call, probably more so than anything else, right? That's how you used to do it.
That's how they would pose all of their female characters.
Yeah.
So maybe don't do that anymore.
breast physics bugs.
All right.
Just kidding.
Oh, man.
Laughable.
I came to the office just chuckling. I was like, what even is this?
It's crazy.
So there was honestly, I'm glad that people are calling this shit out.
Yeah.
You know?
It's nice to see.
So, all right, let's get on to some questions. These questions come from our listeners over at podcast.bscotch.net. If you'd like to get your question into a future episode, slots are limited. So get in there and do that. First question comes from John Pat Chap. Are you all still sticking to the 4-day work week with a jam day on Thursday? I'm curious what you've learned after doing it for this long. If you don't do it anymore, then what made you stop?
Yeah, so we're back to sort of a normal 5-day thing, 2 days off, you know, the usual 5-day work week.
Eight to six.
Most. Yeah. Yep. Well, yeah, 9 to 5, 9 to 6. And I think the reason that we switched back was because we noticed that two things. One was that 3-day weekends, I think when you're doing work the way that we are, which is like all of us are trying to learn new things, we're very focused, whatever else, a 3-day weekend every single weekend is
pretty bad.
It gets a little long on occasion.
It's totally unstructured. I mean, the advantage of work is that you don't have to decide what your day is going to look like.
Right.
So there's actually a lot of mental energy that would go into planning a completely unstructured day, mm-hmm. right? And so, like we talked about in the past, why this is why people's weekends tend to fall apart, you know? And it's why we call it the weekend, because you become weakened.
Mm-hmm.
But and you can do that for a couple days, but doing that for all 3 days, for 3 days in a row every single week,
it takes quite a bit of energy, but I think
you got to fill the void.
The more important piece is actually not necessarily the 3 days off, but the Thursday, the jam day. Because essentially what would happen is that while we would get a bunch of work done, you know, in that 12-hour stretch on Thursday, so that was usually like a 8 or 9 to 8 or 9, basically. While you get a ton of stuff done, you're genuinely pretty fried afterward. So, you know, you come home and just kind of pass out that evening. And then the next day, you're kind of in like a hungover state.
And so you're not doing anything to turn your Friday into a useful
day. I mean, you can run errands, that sort of thing. But for the most part, it's mentally you're a little off. And so we actually experienced this again this past week because on Thursday, we just sort of randomly did a jam day.
We all just hung out until like 7:30 or 8.
Yeah. And we started the day at, you know, 8:39. And so it ended up being one of these really long stretches of time. And then the next day, all of us were just kind of fucked up. It was real bad.
Well, there's that that idea, like if you drink a 5-hour energy or something like that, mm-hmm. you know, you're not just adding energy to your day, you're stealing it from the future, mm-hmm. right? You will crash afterwards. Same thing with like drinking coffee. You know, you kick off your day with drinking coffee, you can drink some more coffee later. Then you just kind of keep stealing energy from the future mm-hmm. until you stop drinking coffee and then you run out and you crash, right? So
that said, we all do drink a lot of coffee and 5-hour energies, but
we're not, you know, nobody's perfect.
But I think the point is that so like what happened on Thursday then was this long stretch of time, a lot of focus. And we got – so I've been sort of measuring those deep hours of work that I was getting to put into the art practice, in particular on Levelhead. And on Thursday, I got an extra like hour and a half or two from that extra couple hours that we were around in the office, which is great. So in other words, that was the most amount of sort of actual legit work time I had in a single day over the course of the week. But it was not as much as the loss that I had on Friday.
Yeah.
Because
– so you kind of stole 4 hours from Friday to get turned it into 2 hours extra on Thursday.
Yeah. So generally what we found is that the we're trying to take much more of just like a paced approach to making these games and stuff, because we find that there is some certain amount of time that once you've done that in a day, say like somewhere between like 4 and 6 hours of like really deep focused work on a particular hard thing in general,
you just got to step away.
You kind of just got to go do something else.
Well, and there's the extra – the thing that I noticed happening is I always want to have some sort of time to wind down, like some cool down time, you know. And so I don't think I've really talked to you guys about this, but like whenever we did our jam days, we would end those at like 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. And I still want to have an evening. You know, I still want to have some dinner. I want to read a book, maybe play some games, whatever. But also I would be so like mentally burnt from that I couldn't really do anything particularly active or useful. So it would create this kind of it would naturally trend toward those kind of like void filling activities, right, like end up on YouTube or Reddit, right, or something like that. And then I would end up staying up way too late that night, which would then make me fucked up even worse, mm-hmm, the next day. And so I found that by doing those jam days, then your routine gets just kind of,
yeah,
totally derailed, which then makes the next day or two even worse, you know.
Yeah. Adam, so, what's your take on it?
Well, I think the original reason that we did it was one that's now sort of incompatible with what we're trying to do. Because the reason that we set the thing up was because we had employees.
Mm-hmm.
And there were sort of two pieces of that. So but the main one was they all needed to learn how to do the work that they were doing, mm-hmm, in the studio. And what we had found was that the normal, you know, 5-day work week, because people just have their lives that they have once they leave the studio, that people weren't finding the time to like study and actually like get caught up on the stuff that they were behind on.
Right.
And so there was that piece. And the other one was,
well, so we thought the 3-day work week would then help create that time. Right.
Right. Cause yeah, the idea is like, now you've got unstructured time on Friday where now you already have your weekend like you did, but now you've also got Friday, which is this unstructured day. You don't have anything that you just like are required to do. You don't have to be producing.
Mm-hmm.
You now have time where you can go
brush
up on your skills. So there was that idea, and that was sort of coupled with the problem that once we had a bunch of people in the studio, if people were gone for doctor's appointments or, you know, things that just happened in the middle of the week, it felt like there was never a moment where just like everybody was in the office.
Yeah. Because the more people you have, the more you notice.
Just like one person's gone at any moment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, if you would have a doctor or dentist appointment or whatever every 7 weeks, so basically almost every 2 months,
mm-hmm,
you get 7 or 8 people into an office, then the likelihood of somebody being gone at some point during the week is actually pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like the League of Legends talk about, like, if you get 10 people into a match, the probability that one of them having a bad day that day,
it's basically guaranteed.
It's almost guaranteed for every match. Yeah. Right.
And you know, we didn't want to be managing people. We didn't want to be keeping track of like who's been gone when, and like, you know, right, you know, we didn't want to do any of that stuff. And so we wanted to be able to say, okay, well, if, you know, Friday is a business day, meaning businesses are open,
mm-hmm,
so
you can go to the bank, you can run errands,
you can do all of your errands and everything.
Get your haircuts.
Everything is doable. So if we basically just said, all right, so Monday through Thursday is absolutely 100% for work, and we need to put in basically an entire work week in those 4 days. That now allows for Friday to be the day where you take care of your errands. You take, mm-hmm, care of your self-improvement stuff. You take care of all the things about being yourself, right? The reality, though, is that people do not respond well to unstructured time, which we talked about.
That's just a thing about people.
Yeah. It's true for us. It's true for our employees. Well, it's true for everybody.
But it's also reality that a lot of things are closed on Fridays.
Yes, there's also that.
And a lot of doctors don't work
on
Fridays.
And the other half are closed on Mondays. So, yeah.
So you could punch a hole in the middle of the week, like on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, which then, so, you know, people, we talk about the past about how people hate Mondays, you know, because part of it is because they spend the entire weekend fucking themselves up by not sleeping properly, eating terrible food, watching Netflix all weekend. And then they come in on Monday feeling stressed out because they didn't get anything done and they still have to clean the house. They still have to do all this stuff. So if you punched a hole in the middle of the week, like on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, then now you've basically just got two Mondays, right? Because now you give people another opportunity to leave work for a day, go mess everything up.
Yeah, because the fact is
and
that
then come back.
People are people. People are not going to spend that Wednesday productively.
No.
If you take that. So any day that people are not working, they are not going to spend productively. Again, this is true for us too. Like I still spend a significant fraction of my Fridays during our 4-day weeks, like learning stuff and whatever. I spend a lot of running errands and that kind of thing. But then when I was done with that stuff, then mostly I was like, now what do I do with myself?
You know? Yeah. And then you got two more days to figure that out with too.
Yeah. And especially so if you're in a position in a company where you know you're behind on the skills that you need or whatever, then there's a strong sort of driving force at least pushing on you. And it's still hard to respond to that properly. But if you're the one making the decisions in the group, like, you know, like we were, it becomes even harder because you're already sort of operating at some productive efficiency within your context. And so you don't need necessarily to like throw in another, you know, 5 hours on a Friday, like learning something or improving your skill in some way. And so it was actually even harder, certainly for me anyway, than it would have been for our employees to actually like use that time productively. But the fact was, it was hard for everybody. There was actually just no – we felt like there was a lot of benefit coming out of it.
I still have two minds about it. I think it was – it's still a very – like it's a good thing to be able to do, but I think it's hard to figure out exactly how to handle the structure behind it. Because the whole point about what we're talking about is that we recognize a problem that we just have as a studio, because a studio is a collection of humans, right? Yeah. Which means that people are going to need to be gone. One of our things that we wanted was for everybody to be around at the same time. So that was sort of the core driver of this whole thing. So we said, why don't we set up a structure as far as work day goes that actually supports this being possible, which was this 4-day work week thing. Yeah. It didn't quite – I think the thing is that the thing at the end of the day was basically that it didn't quite solve the problem in a total way that we were really trying to get at. And a lot of it is because of the fact that so many things are closed. It's not even just about people being people. I think it's like so many things are not
– Yeah. I think we just broke even.
Yeah.
Honestly. You know, because like – We added that extra day, and sometimes you could take use of it and you can run your errands and you could
go on like a 3-day trip or something. Yeah.
Yeah. But then the fact that was also unlikely to happen because we're people, and also we burn ourselves out on that Thursday, mm-hmm. and then the Fridays become less mm-hmm. productive. And then you've got the added burden of now you've got to figure out what to do with 3 completely unstructured days a week instead of 2. And so then the likelihood of sort of messing everything up for yourself by the time Monday rolls back around.
Messing up even harder.
Is even higher, you know. I'd say we got about the same amount of work done. Because there's this interesting thing that you often hear about from books about like redoing the way people think about their work and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they always focus on production, which is like people are really only getting about 3 hours of really actually productive work done a day, mm-hmm. right? So if we just cut the work day down to 3 hours, then people could just focus on the things that really matter, and then you're only working, you know, 15 hours a week. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Why don't we just condense those down into 2 days,
right?
Work 2 7.5-hour days, you know? That kind of thinking completely ignores the psychological side of structure.
You mean the entire context of how you get those 3 hours done, basically.
Yeah. Which is having a routine that you can depend on that also aligns well with the rest of society, mm-hmm. you know? Yep.
And by cutting out, you know, the five hours that things aren't being done very effectively in, that doesn't mean that somehow magically the 3 hours that are left are going to be productive now.
No, that means you're going to try to pack all those 5 hours of admin
into
3 hours. Now you're only going to get 8 minutes of real work done.
Yeah. So I think we've flipped over now to more of a it's the 5-day work week, but with a more constrained hours than we used to think about. We used to always, I think, just try to be putting in a lot, and now it's a bit more important because I think we've seen the value, the creative value of doing, you know, doing that deep focus on stuff and then just leaving and stepping out. So whether that's just doing a sort of a wrap down or a power down at the end of the day and then going to the gym and then just being done with work. Because at least, you know, speaking from my own experience in the last couple of weeks, as we've been transitioning more sort of this deep work idea, a couple hours after work has ended, after I've gymmed, after I've had some dinner, I'll just have some random ideas about stuff.
You need that breathing room.
Yeah, which previously I don't think I really had much space to do that actually, even during the 3-day weekend thing.
Well, I think the thing with the 3-day weekend is that also created sort of an unnaturally strong artificial separation between like work and home, that made it so that, at least for me anyway, like I would do like some learning things and stuff, but I was actively trying not to work on, you know, butterscotch stuff. And
part of the intensity ramps up from Monday through Thursday.
Yeah. And so like then you just get exhausted and you're like, okay, no, cool, now I can go like sort of relax and just do other stuff. But by just making it a normal fucking work week with a normal weekend, everything's just as you've grown up your whole life expecting, like everything is very, very normal. But also you do try to make your work day feel much more like an 8-to-5 kind of a job, right? So that – and then having expected things when you go home of like making dinner, going to the gym, mm-hmm. doing all these things that are definitely not what you were doing, that actually creates this sort of – this soft separation mm-hmm. between home
and
work. It's a nice rhythm where when you go home, you don't feel like you have to be doing anything. You also don't feel like you're escaping anything. Mm-hmm. It's just – you got work and you got home, and it's just like it's two parts of the same thing. There's kind of a fuzzy boundary where it's like that's going to the gym or making dinner or whatever. And so for me, that's been the part that's been super helpful, because like last week, actually what burned me out last week wasn't the intense work week or even the jam day. Because jam days for me could be energizing, they can be draining. It just depends on what's going on. And last week it was the context. The context was I was working on a thing that I really didn't want to be working on. Mm-hmm. Like I really – aggressively did not want to be working on because it was a very hard problem. It was very open-ended. The importance of it was really unclear also. And so I was like – and I was basically – I've been like problem solving and working on this thing starting on a Wednesday, just like all day Wednesday. And then Thursday was like all this.
Yeah, well, it was one of those problems where we thought this may become an issue later.
Yeah. Well, it definitely will.
It's currently going to,
but it is currently fine.
Yeah.
Or at least almost fine. Which and so the question was, do I make it fine now or do I make it fine forever? Because those are my sort of two options, right? And
which you know is actually impossible.
Which has been possible. Yeah. And this is a premature optimization thing, right? Yeah. But I was like, if I could just like square on the right idea, then I could just like solve this once and be done with it, at least for a long time, not forever necessarily. And so for me, that was like – so my brain was constantly trying to flee working on this problem. And so like every opportunity it had, it would get distracted by something. You know? So it would like send me downstairs to go refill my coffee yet again for the fourth time.
Ooh, my coffee's at 2/3 full.
Yeah, exactly.
Better go.
And that's literally what happened. I would pick it up and I'd be like, oh, there's only a little bit left in here. And instead of just
all of a sudden you're very focused on – just how much coffee.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It's a real big problem.
So my brain was doing this to me starting basically Wednesday last week. Mm-hmm. And then like all day Thursday, it was actually my constant interruptions that made me exhausted. Cause for me, deep work actually doesn't exhaust me that much really. It doesn't energize me either. It's just like, it's more meditative. It's just like
getting into it is the hard part.
Getting into it is the hard part. But once you're in there, like I can be in there for like a whole day at a time and then just feel completely
I feel
fine.
Like you need a good sort of like 30 to 40 minutes of uninterrupted struggle before you really kind of get into the zone.
I think it's so funny. We get the question we got either last week or 2 weeks ago. Someone's like, how do you guys make so much stuff? And it's like, we are struggling every day.
It's pure chaos.
It is painful.
Every time I look at my coffee cup, I'm like, should I go get more right now? And my brain sometimes is like, yes, you should, buddy.
But imagine if we were also tweeting during all this. It would be
brutal.
But I was wondering, though, because you guys were talking about how you got burnt out from the full day on Thursday and all this deep work and stuff. But was it the full day of deep work? Or was it that – or was it that
– It was for me, it was what happened afterwards.
And that, but that you were strong – like your goal that day was to put in as much deep work as possible, which meant every time you got distracted by an admin task or a collaboration or something and then had to get back into it. Then that meant you didn't get to just like gently get in. You were always forcing yourselves like back into the
I had a very easy time getting in and out of it on Thursday. I think what actually happened to me, because I tried intermittent fasting on Thursday.
Oh yeah, you're doing that too.
So it was the combination of finishing a bunch of work and like working like a maniac for 8 hours.
Yeah, because this is what I was wondering. Like, was it really that Thursday was representative of what happens if you're jam day? Because I felt it was context dependent.
Well, it's context dependent, but I think the point is the is about
it makes
what
it
happens
fragile.
In your work day is not just that's not the only thing that happens to you, right? So
yeah, I think long hours make you fragile.
Yes. So in my case,
that's what happened to me.
Yeah, I worked a long time and then went home and could not fucking sleep. Yeah. So I slept just like nothing
because you didn't have enough time to ramp down.
Exactly.
Yeah. My plan was like I was originally gonna work and then go to the gym and then go home, have a nice dinner, play some video games, read a book, go to bed. Instead. I'm arriving home at like 8:15 or 8:30. No gym time, so skipped that whole thing. And I'm also – I feel like I don't have enough time to get a lot of like productive time out of playing a game or something because, you know, that also takes some time to kind of get into. And I don't want to ramp up this intense activity right before bed, right? So I'm like, well, I'll just read. And I picked up my book, started reading, and I was about 3/4 of the way through, which is a dangerous time.
Now you had to finish it?
Yeah, because like I'm not gonna close the book at 10:30 p.m. when I'm 90% of the way through it. So then I end up staying up until 11:30.
Yep.
You know, then I'm low on sleep, and I also haven't done anything useful. So I have that little added stress from the night before of like there's dishes to do, there's just kind of extra pile of things that I didn't take care of. So then of course that all spills over into just a terrible Friday.
Yep.
So yeah, and it's that fragility of the routine.
Yeah,
where you've got to
once you establish a routine, if you just throw a wrench in there,
then it's there for a reason.
Yep.
You know, and so you can't get greedy. Yeah. You can't think I can. But the funny thing is that you know I gave this talk a while back. Do what you want, and I talked about this problem of trying to do more, which is you can't just be like I'm going to exercise more because. You also have to finish that sentence with, and I'm going
to
do less of X
to make room for it.
Right. Because you simply can't do more. you're already doing all of it, mm-hmm. and you have to stop, you have to cut something out, right? So if you're making the decision of like, you know what, I'm going to put in an extra 3 hours of work today, then you also have to finish the sentence mm-hmm. and talk about the things you're going to be not doing right. then in order to
make
fit
sure
that.
You're okay with that.
Yeah, and then think about the consequence of like, well, what, like, why do I normally do these things?
Yeah.
And is it appropriate to cut them out right. or should
but
I
this
just.
This is important because coming back to the whole idea of like the Thursday jam day, if that was actually built into a habitual framework where on Thursdays, everything about your evening at home was also designed around the fact that mm-hmm. you were going to be gone from like 8 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Yeah,
or whatever.
I didn't finish the plan basically at
yeah.
that time.
Well, because you were planning to go to the gym, like you said, and yeah. you didn't get to, right? You were planning to make dinner, and then yep. you didn't get to.
Instead, I just stopped at Panda Express on the way home. Also, my blood sugar crashed horribly.
Yeah.
So I had to inhale a bunch of orange chicken. It was delicious. But,
yeah, so like yeah. – so
actually, no. Sorry. That happened on Friday. Friday yeah, because I tried yeah. to do Sam –
I tried to do your fasting.
Yeah, Sam was like, oh, you got to try this fasting. I'm like, okay. And I'm driving home. By the time I get home, my hands are tingly. Like I'm all cold and clammy, and I'm like, ah! Because I just – basically, I just skipped lunch. I still ate – snacks throughout the day, you know, but no, it was bad.
Doesn't work for everybody.
That also yeah, helps but that's to all, fuck yeah. up my Friday.
Yeah, well, we can get into that. That's a different thing we can get yeah. into. But the point I wanted to make was that anything can be made into a routine if you actually do it holistically and pay attention to it. And so when we were talking about why we sort of departed from the Thursday jam and all this kind of stuff, like that was basically incompatible with the kind of work life we wanted to have. Which is that we actually like working. Mm-hmm. And so having the 3-day weekend was really just time for us to fuck around that we didn't feel
and
productive.
Do less of the thing we want to
exactly.
do.
Exactly. And it wasn't actually causing us to do more of certain things that were good for us. It was actually just causing us to have bad habits. And so for us, having that 5-day work week it's just super beneficial and something we decided that we wanted to get back. A person absolutely could make something like the 4-day work week with the Thursday jam day mm-hmm. work. And frankly, it actually worked pretty well, at least for me, for certain chunks of the time that we were doing yeah, it.
Definitely.
And it was those chunks where I was actually treating it appropriately and treating it as a thing I needed to build habits around. The problem is that something that has that large of an impact on your day and it's that spiky and weird because now it's just like one day a week you just have this crazy
you're just gone.
You're just gone, right? Right. Then you have to design the rest of your life around it. And if you don't, if you let those other things slide at all, then now it's a bad thing again. And I think that's basically where I ended up sort of in the last like third of our time doing the Thursday jam days was that I didn't maintain the discipline of keeping my life in order around the jam days.
I mean, right. I think it's hard when you're doing something that is against the grain of what society's doing generally.
Yeah.
Because also there's like events, professional events. There's all sorts of things that happen in the evenings on Thursdays.
Yeah.
That we just didn't go to.
So guys, it's about that fragility. So to me, the reason that I would actually argue against a Thursday work week, I think it's possible, definitely. Mm-hmm. But I think it's very fragile. Even if you build habits around it, because it is actually extremely costly to maintain those habits. It requires a lot of discipline. And so the likelihood of you letting them slide and then having that be a bad thing instead of a good thing is super high.
So that's what we learned.
There you yeah. go.
So we're back on the 5-day work week, 40 hours a week. Well, probably more like 50, but you know.
Yeah, 50 probably.
But yeah, it's a marathon, not a sprint. You know, you've got a certain amount of energy, it feels like. Yeah.
You run that marathon like with all you got, you know. But you don't sprint the whole time.
No.
It's the fastest you can run a marathon.
That's a good way to end up walking for the last 25.9 miles.
Yes. You know?
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. We'd like to thank our producer, Fat Bard, for making us sound good. Thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord running. If you'd like to get more involved in the Butterscotch community, hop into our Discord server at discord.gg/bscotch and come say hello. Also, if you'd like to adorn your body with Butterscotch merch, you can check out our shop, which is over at shop.bscotch.net. Also, if you'd like to send us something, we do have a mailbox, which you can find the address for over at mailbox.bscotch.net. If you'd like to donate to support the podcast, you can do so at moneygrab.bscotch.net. And if you want to come see us in person, play Levelhead, and eat some delicious food, you can go to meet.bscotch.net. Spelled however you want now, apparently.
As long as I remember.
Yes. As long as Adam remembers to update that. All right, well, thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.